All right, so now we'll turn our attention to the Andes. It's not very far from the Amazon. And look at impacts and adjustments to climate change there. As we've seen in these presentations, agriculture is, of course, a very highly climate-dependent activity. So it's really no wonder that it's quite likely to be affected by climate change. But there is still much to be learned regarding the nature and the magnitude of this impact. There are very many factors involved, so that makes it hard to predict. In the climate system, we have the temperature, precipitation, wind, extreme weather, and CO2 concentrations. We're not only going to see changes in means, but also in ranges, in seasonal patterns, distributions. So it's a highly complex situation. And then this affects our crop plants and our livestock directly, but it will also affect it indirectly through affecting pests and pollinators and weeds, other species that again affect bees, like vectors, natural enemies, and prey. So that's it's a complex picture. It's hard to get on top of it. And we can get some clues through, for instance, computer modeling, but we can only get so far. And as we try and wrap our head around this, it's very important, of course, not to forget that we also have farmers. Of course, most agroecosystems would soon collapse if farmers were not around. And farmers are actually going to be they are a keystone species, if you will, for agroecosystems. And so climate change does not affect agroecosystems without farmers' intervention. So it's very important, farmers' reaction to climate change. That will have everything to say for whether we're going to be able to continue to produce food or not. So agriculture must adapt to climate change. The stakes are high. We're talking about local and global food security. And we now see policies and programs to aid agricultural adaptation are starting to be formed. And these can benefit from computer modeling, but they have to also be informed by field-based research. Because climate change is already upon us, and there is a lot to be learned by, for instance, looking at climatic changes in local settings, by looking at agroecosystemic changes, and by looking at changes in farmers' strategies. And so there are a lot of research questions to be addressed. And I've looked a bit into how has recent climate change affected agricultural conditions, and what are farmers' emerging coping strategies? And are these strategies going to lead to sustainable adaptation or not? By sustainable adaptation, I mean adaptation that is also going to be likely providing for food security into the future under climate change. So I looked at it through a case study in northern Ecuador in a place called Cotacachi. I did research there for my dissertation, 2009 and 10. Actually, I also did research there back in 2003 and 4 for my master's research. Multiple methods, participatory observation, focus groups, workshops, and interviews and mapping. And so what I'll present here is really just a summary of some of the results regarding climate change. This is a map Cotacachi is the name of this dormant volcano up in the left-hand corner. It's also the name of the main town in this county, which is down that red large circle, Cotacachi. And then you have all those other dots. Those are communities, most of them inhabited by Quechua indigenous people. There are about 16,000 people living in the area, in the rural area. And agriculture is an important livelihood strategy here. It's also a central part of the culture. They've been growing their food for millennia in this area. So the culture is really much built around agriculture. Subsistence production is predominant in these rural communities, but there are also some production for sale. Polyculture is very common. A very high crop diversity. Maize and beans and potatoes are the most common crops, but I actually documented over 100 crop species and loads of varieties, over 350 varieties within. And here you see some of this diversity. About half of the species, crop species, are native, and about half are introduced. So lots of different diversity. But this diversity is not just spread in the landscape in a haphazard manner. It's quite well designed in patterns, in time and space. So different crop complexes are grown in different seasons and also in different altitudes, as we heard earlier in the Himalayas. There is this correlation between altitude and temperature, and that, of course, also goes for the Andes. So the crop complexes are adapted to that. This is a region where climate change is already noted as well. Higher temperatures especially. Also glacial loss. More extreme weather. And then this thing about seasonal irregularity that we have heard about earlier today. And farmers in particular note this seasonal irregularity. It rains when it's not supposed to rain, and then when it finally starts raining, then the rain comes down heavier than it used to. And then it stops raining and it's dry for longer than usual periods. How does this affect agriculture? Well, there are a number of ways. I just tried to sum it up a little bit. Many point to increased pest problems. There are some new pests that have appeared in this area, and there are also increasing problems with already present pests. This leads to reduced harvests and also problems of storing seed and grain. This mountain, Cotacachi, used to be covered by a glacier. That glacier disappeared in the end of the 20th century, and that has severely reduced the stream flows in the waterways in the area. So there is increasing water scarcity, especially when the rains don't come. That dries out plants and also makes it harder to keep livestock. And then when the rains come, when they come to the wrong times, then that gives problems, increased problems of especially late blight in potatoes and also rot in other crops. Waterlogged fields makes it harder to work. Erosion decreases soil fertility. But farmers, as Gary Nagin pointed to, they're not just passive victims. They do things. They're innovative. They experiment. So what do they do in this case? Different things. They're looking for new water sources in order to have irrigation. About half of these communities already have access to irrigation and half don't. So those that don't, they're looking into where to source water. Some reduce their livestock assets. Increasing use of pesticides is another strategy to tackle pest problems. Some harvest maize and beans in their fresh state. Usually they harvest some of the maize and beans when they're fresh, and then they leave the rest for it to dry in the field and so that they can harvest it and store it. You use it through the year and use it for seed. But after several years of losing a lot of that harvest that was left to mature in the field due to prolonged rains, then some have started to harvest more in its fresh state and sell it and then buy food instead, because you cannot store that for a long time. And that, and combined with the problems of seed storage, pests, reduced harvest, leads to an increasing reliance on purchasing seed as compared to saving it. Seed saving is very common in this area, but some farmers go over to purchasing more. Some focus on more of those resistant crops, and I'm not talking about these Monsanto's silver bullet crops here, but more of the resistant crops that already are present in the local system. Some try and move planting dates to fit the new patterns better. It's not always as easy because you never really know what next year is going to look like. And finally, they're starting to experiment also here with height zones. And especially maize is moving up the mountain. Okay, so now I'll just show you some images to illustrate these different strategies. Here you see a group of farmers. They recently acquired the rights to use the water in a spring in the Paramo above the agricultural zone. And I went with them to do some measurements in order to plan for how to pipe that water back down to the community. Yeah, many families keep some livestock. When the conditions get dry and difficult, then they sell them off. Pesticides is not really very much used in this area, but when the problems are increasing, then the use is also increasing. And here you see some fresh maize, very delicious. Illustrates that some people now move over to harvesting more and more in its fresh state. This is how maize seed is usually stored, saved for the next year. But now, climate change might induce more people to go to the store and get their seed. This is a field of fava beans grown in summer. Summer is usually used to grow peas and potatoes because it's a dry period. But in 2007 and 2008, summers were wet. So in 2009 and also in 2010, a number of farmers were experimenting with growing fava beans instead of potatoes in this season. So they thrive more and it's a bit rainy. Moving planting dates is also a strategy. It's not very easy though, because they don't really know, of course, what is going to happen, but quite a few farmers experiment with that. And then finally, moving maize higher up. I did some field walks with farmers, and where they indicated the highest maize field 20 years ago and the highest maize field in 2010. And there was a consistent change there of about 200 to 300 height meters. So those upper red dots show the current highest maize fields. So maize is a heat-demanding crop. And it used to be grown up until about 3,000 meters, but now it's grown up until the very top of the agricultural zone at 3,300. It's giving quite good harvests up at the very top. And this is, I think in this area, that's sort of an easy solution, and they don't really have to change their culture very much in order to start using this new crop. You see, for instance, this community of Shapungo up there, they could not grow maize until about, it's about 15 years ago that the first farmer there experimented with maize. But they have used maize for a long time already through exchange with other communities, so it's a crop that they know. This might be harder if we're talking about ecosystems that are, or areas that are flatter, so that transporting crops into new zones will mean that there is also sort of a cultural distance. But in this case, it's so steep and the different zones are so close together that it's quite feasible. All right, so I just wrap up by saying some words about the sustainability of these different strategies, and some words about potential interventions. Because I think it's very important when we start, or people start thinking about how to aid agricultural adaptation, it's important to note what's already going on, because things are already going on. All right, so in terms of searching for new water sources, that doesn't really have a short-term effect, but in the long term, it might sustain agriculture if you have irrigation sources. Reducing livestock assets is really no good, nor in the short term nor in the longer term, in terms of food security. Increasing the use of pesticides might be positive in the short term, but in the longer term it might erode the sustainability of the agroecosystem. Harvesting maize and beans in its fresh state, well, it might be good if your crop would be lost, if not if you didn't do it. But having some money in the pocket is usually not as secure as having food stored. Purchasing seed instead of saving it? Well, maybe it's a short-term solution, but in the longer term, if people do not no longer save seed in this area, if they do no longer, and that means, yeah, that they're not going to be able to maintain this high crop diversity, because seeds that are for purchase are usually from the formal sector and not as diverse. Focusing on resistant crops that already exist within the system, moving in planting dates and planting maize higher up, shifting the altitude, is quite likely to be sustainable strategies also in the long term. So there's sort of a mix there. Some of the things that people do might undermine actually the sustainability of the system. Well, some things are quite sustainable. So, and crop diversity, agrobiodiversity actually plays kind of a key role here. People use it as a resource to adapt. But then there are also some processes that might undermine it. Crop diversity, this moving over to purchased seed. All right, so what could some potentially productive interventions be here in this case? Well, because of water, support the process, I think, is key here. External interventions might help securing water access, improving the irrigation system. This is an area where farmers actually appreciate and need external assistance. They have to deal with bureaucratic systems that they that are not always easy to manage. This might also reduce the need of reducing livestock assets. In terms of pesticides, there is a potential here for alternative pest management systems, and there you can draw on IPM as well as traditional ecological knowledge. In terms of this harvesting crops before they're fully mature, their seasonal weather prediction might help farmers to do good decisions in relation to what weather is going to come. Also, placing value on seed saving, I think, is important. And I'm just going to go a bit fast here. So, supporting the local process in the case of focusing on resistant crops, moving planting days and moving crops might be a good strategy. For those wanting to aid adaptation, instead of trying to, for instance, just provide farmers with this external seed, which actually is likely to undermine the whole system. All right, summing it up, climate change does affect agriculture in northern Ecuador already. Farmers do observe these changes and their effects on agricultural conditions. Farmers do independently experiment with different strategies to deal with the outdoor conditions. Some of these strategies appear to promote sustainability, whereas others might undermine it. Local crop diversity emerges as a key resource for farmers' adaptation. And programs to aid farmers should be based on insights into these ongoing processes, support the sustainable paths, and then work out alternatives together with farmers for those undermining sustainability.